Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Nicole Lorie, Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. So as a follow-on in the last segment, you laid out your efforts to make sure you have the right people in the right spots who are technically capable. What I'd like to understand is in this era of fiscal constraint, how do you keep your employees motivated and focused on the mission when there may be sort of when they're facing dramatic, maybe painful changes?
You know, it's a really great question. And I think one of the things that is so hard for federal employees in general is this sort of constant drumbeat of sort of bashing federal employees because they're federal employees. In fact, the people who are in our organization come because they are dedicated to the mission. And gosh, I don't know anybody that works a 40-hour work week there, to be honest. And people work really, really hard day in and day out because they know we don't have much time to get ready for what's going to happen next. So for them, a lot of the satisfaction comes from the mission. And, you know, when you respond to a disaster and save lives and help people and communities, it is very, very rewarding. When you get a countermeasure across the finish line and have it licensed as we just did, it is very, very rewarding for our scientists and others. And so we recognize and celebrate the rewards. We find lots of ways internally to recognize people that are not monetary. Because at the end of the day, most people don't work in federal government for the money. They work in federal government because they're committed to federal service or because there's a mission that they want to do or because they find the work fulfilling. And so focusing on that fulfillment is really important. Now, at the same time, I've got to be really responsible about what I do with taxpayer money. And I take that mission to heart every single day. So the more we can be efficient through our quality improvement programs and others, the more I am able to support my staff to do what they need to do to grow and develop. But I'd also say at the end of the day, there are things probably across all levels of government, federal, state, local, that are just not so efficient. And the challenge is to look at this budget crisis a little bit as a disruptive technology. You know, I'm not going to get very far right now by wringing my hands and getting everybody depressed. What I have to look at, and that's where innovation has been so helpful, is what this challenges us. It forces us to have to do something differently. And we're all up to the challenge, and it is very satisfying when we find that way to do something different that is cost effective. That doesn't mean that we can work with no money. It doesn't mean that we can work with drastic budget cuts. But it does mean, and I believe there are a whole cadre of leaders like that in federal government who really embrace change and efficiency and responsible stewardship.
So throughout our conversation, it's obvious to me and from your comments and your insights that partnering and collaboration are essential for you folks to meet your mission. I don't know if you have any more to offer to that, but I'd like to focus in on your international and interagency partnerships and collaboration and how you use them.
I would love to do that. So I would say, at least throughout the time that I've been in federal government this time, I see the federal family partnering in new ways all the time. Certainly for us in ASPR, we can't do our work in HHS without the rest of HHS at the table. So whether it's Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, coming to the table with payment policies for healthcare institutions, whether it's the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration coming to the table to help us with behavioral health planning and response, whether it's the Agency for Community Living helping us figure out how best to serve elderly and disabled populations, whether it's CDC, so central to what we do, or NIH, we all come together all the time. And just about everything we do in preparedness and response, and now in recovery, we do as a team. And so we're able to really leverage the assets of everybody and all of the agencies in the department. And when the chips are down, when something really happens, we're all at the table providing input to one another, making suggestions to one another, putting what we've got in terms of assets and people on the table to come together in a response. The same thing I would say with the rest of the federal family, and I think I started with some of this, whether it's FEMA or the Department of Transportation or DHS or DOD or any other part of government, the Department of Education, who we've worked so closely with both around H1N1 and now around school shootings, we all come to the table to work together. And I think that that's been very effective. Internationally, preparedness is absolutely a global mission. And disasters happen around the world all the time. We learn from things that happen around the world and from expertise that others have, and they learn from us. We're very, as you know, active supporters and participants of WHO, the World Health Organization, and work on a lot through the World Health Assembly. We are very dedicated, as the entire department is, to facilitating and helping with the implementation of international health regulations, which are key to the early detection and reporting of diseases or public health events of significance, so that there's good and early visibility to them around the whole world. We work in partnership with a number of other countries. A partnership that is particularly important to us at ASPR is something called the Global Health Security Initiative. That's an initiative, again, that started after 9/11 and anthrax, and it was an initiative in which a number of developed countries came together and said, we're all going to work together and learn from one another, both so we can help each other and so we can help other countries in the world. And that's been a very effective partnership in much of what we do. And certainly through whether it was H1N1 or deep water or the Fukushima reactor disaster, Japan is part of this and others, mm-hmm. we all were able to come together, have a lot of scientific collaboration, a lot of policy collaboration, and a lot of communication, so we all know what each other are doing, what the communication challenges are, and we can do a better job communicating without confusion.
As you look to the future, what are some of the major opportunities and possible challenges your organization will face, and what do you think you might do to actually meet those challenges and seize those opportunities?
Well, so many of the major opportunities are in this area of innovation, okay. whether it's in innovating for health resilience technologies, or for medical countermeasures, or for just the way we do business. Opportunities all over the place. Innovation in the use of social media. Scientific breakthroughs help us all the time in the innovation space. And so that's been, I think, very exciting. We are very actively working on innovation in bringing together all the data sources we talked about, like in our MedMap platform, in whole community planning for all different kinds of populations. We're focusing very much now on modernizing the National Disaster Medical System and helping it to be faster, more nimble, potentially have sometimes a smaller size footprint when that's needed, mm-hmm. so that it can be most useful in the situations that it's called into act. And it's called to act in a whole wide range of ways, and we just need to be able to have configurations that let us do that. We spent a lot of time modernizing the countermeasure enterprise. Now we're sort of really working on modernizing many aspects of the response enterprise. Another area that I think is very, very important for the future is that responsibilities for recovery were transferred into our office about a year ago. And I think it's great because we now respond differently, knowing we're on the hook for helping a community recover. And we respond with recovery in mind. And for communities, it means that, you know, they don't fall off a cliff when it comes to interacting with a part of the federal government, but there's a series of partners that see them through from beginning to end. And I think there's a huge amount of future potential to learn how to do that better and more effectively and really focus much more deliberately on what beside money it takes a community to recover. Looking forward to the future in the medical countermeasure enterprise, where more and more of what we're able to make and develop helps day to day as well as on game day. I talked to you about ventilators. Another area where we've been working is that we have to develop new classes of antibiotics for the bio threats that face us. And because antibiotic resistance, which I know your listeners have heard a lot about, will complicate anything we do. But in developing those new classes of antibiotics, we are also addressing a really major public health threat for the country and for the world. And that's a very exciting kind of space to be in. So, you know, I very much look toward the future in all of those ways and working with, you know, our global partners, our federal partners, our state and local partners, and the American people who at the end of the day are why we do all this and at the end of the day are so central to all of our successes.
So, Dr. Lori, what advice would you give someone who's thinking about a career in either medicine, public health, or public service in general?
Well, what I would say for me is that a career in medicine has been unbelievably fulfilling in more ways than I ever imagined. As I said, I still love doing patient care and volunteer in a community clinic once a week, and it keeps me very grounded. Being able to be a doctor for my community and now a doctor for my country is an incredible calling and an incredible honor and opportunity. You have an opportunity to make a difference through medicine and through public health in the lives of individuals, in the lives of populations and communities. And it's an amazing way of giving something of yourself and getting so much more back in terms of the satisfaction of knowing the ways in which you've helped people. I would say that when it comes to public service, that too is an incredible opportunity and an incredible honor. And to be able to do work on behalf of the country, on behalf of the American people or people in a local jurisdiction is just a tremendous opportunity to have an impact. What I would say to many people, particularly people in medicine and often in public health who are thinking about public service, is I think it's easier to be more effective in public service once you've got the basic skills in place. So it might not be a bad idea to work somewhere else first, to sort of hone your skills and your reflexes, and then to come into government at a level where you know that you can be effective and don't necessarily have to get bogged down by a lot of the processes involved in learning that. And I've been lucky enough to do that in my career, and it's just been incredibly fulfilling.
So, Dr. Lori, this has been a wonderful conversation. I appreciate your time today, but more importantly, I'd like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Well, thank you. It's been an honor and a privilege. If people are interested in more information about who we are and what we do, two websites that you might want to look at. One is called PHE.gov, stands for Public Health Emergency. .gov, and the other would be medicalcountermeasures.gov, which focuses purely on the countermeasure issues. Also like for people to know that every year there is a public health preparedness summit. This year it will be held in Atlanta, Georgia, March 12th to 15th. And it's a meeting in which not only our federal partners, but state, local, private sector, non-governmental organizations come together to share with one another what they do, what they've learned, best practices, research findings, and whatever. So Atlanta, Georgia, March 12th to 15th. I hope to see some people there.
Wonderful. Thanks again. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Dr. Nicole Lori, Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.